Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon. Starting off Winnipeg Jets game day coverage here on TSN 1290. In 6 hours' time, the Winnipeg Jets and the Nashville Predators, live from Music City, USA, will take action here on this fine station. In the meantime, we'll get you set for all the day's NHL hockey. Joining us in about 30 minutes' time, from Yahoo's Puck Daddy, Josh Cooper is going to join us. Josh knows the Nashville Predators as well as anybody in the NHL, so he's a good friend of the show. So he'll be joining us to talk about the Predators in about 30 minutes. The top of next hour, Saturday Spotlight interview, Carey Fraser. Tremendous interview. It's about 40 minutes in length, so we get really in-depth with Carey Fraser, former NHL official, current TSN.ca author, and he's all over TSN hockey with his Your Call segment with Carey Fraser. Terrific interview with him. We're going to join. You'll enjoy that in about 1 hour's time. In the final hour, Steve Karp from the Las Vegas Review-Journal to talk about the NHL in Las Vegas. Seems like it might be a foregone conclusion at this point. We'll talk to Steve about that. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. I say good afternoon to my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, good to see you both, and welcome to the program.
Yeah, Drew, how's it going, man?
Well, I was doing better until I see that you're wearing a Million Dollar Man t-shirt.
It's the best shirt ever.
What decade is that t-shirt from? Why does that make you feel less good?
It
should make you feel better.
Yeah, I mean, well, I don't have as much money as the Million Dollar Man, so that does make me feel great.
You know, my friend Sean Moglove, well, we all know Sean, he brought this back from Minneapolis. I thought it was a really nice present.
How many years ago?
Like 3 weeks ago.
Oh, it's a recent t-shirt?
It's not a retro shirt.
It's a retro shirt, Drew.
Come on. I apologize. I thought it was something from like you dug out of the back of your closet from like 1988.
No, I wish. It's a vintage t-shirt from one of my favorite wrestlers of all time.
Too many skeletons in that closet.
Yeah, there's a lot of skeletons in that closet. That's right. Richard, good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing well, Drew.
All right, let's get underway, starting with discussions of the Winnipeg Jets road trip so far. We know the Jets on Thursday evening went into Carolina where they defeated the Hurricanes by a 3-1 margin. They moved to 2 wins, 1 loss so far on this 5-game road trip. The wins coming last Saturday in Ottawa, Thursday in Carolina, in Raleigh, and then losing Tuesday, obviously, in Montreal. You know, let's start with Thursday's game. Your thoughts on the game, your impressions, you know, is that the Jets, were they the better of the two teams taking, playing against a weaker opponent? And did you think that they did enough to sort of impose their will in taking that 3-1 victory?
Yeah, I thought they were the better team, Drew. I mean, they came out, and they were pretty focused. They're able to play, you know, a confident game with the lead. Carolina is not a very good team, and they have the guys who can beat you, but their defense is very poor. And, I mean, Cam Ward played really well. Cam Ward looked really good, and I thought the Jets carried the play. I thought the Carolina game was how the Jets are playing now. I mean, if you're a Jets fan, you like to see them win. Is it the most aesthetically pleasing hockey? Probably not, but you don't care because they're winning. If you're a random fan from Chicago, you're not turning on the Jets to playing right now because they're not playing the, you know, the most exciting brand of hockey, but fans of the team, and certainly the team, doesn't care. Right now, the team is buying into Paul Maurice. His coaching, he's doing a very good coaching job right now, and I think not only in motivationally speaking, but also strategically. But you think about it. This team, we've said it before, this team can run and gun with the big teams. And they've bought into that, and they're playing solid defensively and taking their chances off transition and with the skill they have. And they have skill, for sure, just not at the level of, you know, San Jose's and LA's and things like that. And, you know, beating the team that they're supposed to be beating is part of that job. And too often in the past, they weren't doing that, and now they are.
Right, Richie. And as you mentioned, these games might not be the most exciting games, but if you're a fan, as you mentioned, you love the fact that they've got points in 9 of 10 games. Mm-hmm. And in that Carolina game, we talked about it on the Wednesday show. you know, the Carolina Hurricanes, they have skill on this team, but they really are top heavy. After you get out of the top six, you're expecting a lot of guys that are mainly players that have played in the AHL, and that's due to some injuries. And at the beginning of the season, they were a team that was not expected to make the playoffs by most. But, you know, I thought JP Vigier, who, of course, on the station did a great job of explaining it in the Winnipeg Free Press in his whiteboard segment, how the Jets have improved defensively. And I think that's the biggest difference. And you've heard that over the last 3 or 4 weeks, you know, since the winning streak or the point streak started, I guess, on this radio station. It's all about defense, and you start with Tobias Enstrom and Zach Bogosian, and we were really hard on Zach Bogosian last year coming out of the first year of his 7-year deal, and if you look at that game, and you know it's on the highlights, and everybody saw the play he made on Nathan Gerby coming back, and then later on the game, he gets a stick on Elias Lindholm, and you know at the time, you could argue that that maybe was a penalty.
That was a penalty,
He took the feet from under him, and Carey Fraser would probably agree with that, that was a penalty, but the way they've played defensively, the Jets right now, and I was writing this for my game day setup, which I write for LegalCurve.com. Dave Manuk, I imagine, will have that up later this afternoon. The Jets are right now allowing the 7th fewest shots against, and last year they were allowing the 14th most. So to me, that is a huge improvement. And I know you don't want to just, you know, throw out one stat as if that's the be-all, end-all explanation of this team. But guys, you look at, you know, the bottom six of this team having trouble scoring goals, and like, what's the main difference? And the obvious answer in two words is Andrei Pavlik. He's a lot better than he was this year, or I would say significantly better, but also the defense in front of him. And you look at a guy like Paul Postma, I think he's continued to get better and better. You know, I think maybe he's not the offensive defenseman that we expected. He's never probably going to get 35, 40 points in the NHL, but I think he's gotten better. But you look at the Carolina game, they're keeping them to a low shot total, and really to the Montreal game and even the Ottawa game, this entire road trip, they're doing a really good job of playing tight defensively in front of Andrei Pavlik, and you're starting to see the results. And really, if I'm Paul Maurice, do I care if these are exciting games? Not every game is going to be the Winnipeg-Pittsburgh game, but at the end of the day, Richie, you're trying to stay in the playoff race here. Because at the beginning of the season, you lose 4 or 5 games, and you lose a couple more games, and you're out of it in early November. Now they've really saved their season, and you know they've got some tough games coming up at home in this tough back-to-back set, but you're getting points. You're finding a way to get points.
Yeah, I mean, you beat Ottawa, who I think you're better than. You beat Carolina, who I think you're better than. You lost to Montreal, who I think you're not as good as. I mean, you could simplify it to that.
Sure.
But at the same time, they haven't necessarily always beat the teams that they're better than.
That's right.
And, I mean, they were in the Montreal game. I mean, certainly you could say Ottawa game. You know, these games are one-goal games, a lot of them. It could go both ways. A lot of the Jets games have been one-goal games, but this is also a game, a sport, where you play differently when you're up a goal. You play a different style of play. It's not like, you know, baseball, you're trying to score as many runs as possible and kind of flip a coin. You changed completely. And it doesn't mean you don't change a baseball, but there's certainly a difference there. You can control that defensively. You look at, you know, overall, they're also, you have to understand, they're going through a 3-game East Coast trip. We've talked about it extensively. The Western teams are way better than the Eastern teams, so you have to take advantage of it. You know, you just mentioned Carolina. They get 4 points against Carolina, the 4 points that they're supposed to get.
That's right.
And they took care of business against them here in Winnipeg and in Carolina. That's done. So you have to be able to take care of business against teams that are considerably worse than you. Like, Carolina's a terrible team. Like, first of all, I don't know how we're going to talk about Las Vegas when you look at the Carolina crowd on Thursday, but that's for another day, or for maybe later in the show, okay? But Carolina,
I don't think they announced the attendance. I was thinking it was like 7,000 or 8,000.
I think they announced it just over 10,000.
Well, that's hilarious. There couldn't have been more than 3,000 people there. But you know, the team is playing a confident style too. And I think it was the Pittsburgh game. You listen to the post game audio, and a lot of the players said, "We feel like we gave Pittsburgh too much respect at the beginning of the game. We came back and we asserted ourselves, and we thought we could come back." I think the team is playing in a confident fashion now, and we can talk all we want about numbers and different things and Pavlik and all that stuff. This team believes, and I think this is a credit to Paul Maurice and the rest of the coaching staff, that they can win. And you watch them play, and they play like they believe they can win.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's certainly been helpful. Now, you give them credit for getting the leads. Certainly it's been helpful that all these games, for the most part, they're playing with the lead.
Well,
but hey, you have to get the lead to play with the lead.
Sure.
So give them credit. And again, if you're a Jets fan, you're riding high right now.
I want to circle back to what Ezzy was talking about before, about Zach Bogosian's play.
Uh-huh.
And he articulated it well about how improved he's been as of late. What do you attribute that improvement to? Do you think it's anything in particular, or is it just a function of almost he couldn't be as bad as he was last season?
I think he's playing within a structure of the team. I think that, again, these things aren't in a vacuum, right? Why is Zach Bogosian playing better? Well, I think first off, he's playing with Tobias Enstrom, who's been terrific. I think second of all, the forwards are staying back more. There's more support. Certainly the goaltender's playing better as well. So these are all factors that make him look better. And I think he's making a little more of the simple play, right? That's where Zach Bogosian is going to succeed, making the simple play. He's not the smartest defenseman. He's a hell of a skater. Not the smartest defenseman. He's physical. He can log a lot of minutes. That's what he's good at. And right now, he's just doing what he's good at. You know, when he tries to do too much offensively, it's a bit of a mess. But if when he's not doing that right now, he's getting rid of that puck more quickly. He's a solid horse. You know, he's a top four guy who can play a lot of minutes. And they're not asking him to be a big time guy on the power play. And frankly, that's not really the strength is. And I think that helps him.
But you know, in that first goal by Blake Wheeler,
yeah,
you know, shot from the point.
Sure, I mean,
but not winding up with a big shot, just trying to get it on that net and getting the tip,
playing within himself.
Yeah.
Right. It's you know, he doesn't do that all the time. But when he shoots the puck, how many of these goals the Jets have scored the past 10 games have been tips in front of the net? Well, there's, you know, credit to the guys tipping, like Andrew Ladd, Wheeler, those guys, but also credit to the defenseman for just putting the puck on net, not too hard, and not missing the net.
And that's what you have to do when you're a team like the Jets who hasn't been scoring a lot of goals. And I think you make some good points, Richie, and to add to that, he's healthy. And Zach Bogosian only played, mm-hmm. Only played 55 games last year. He had 11 points. And I think part of that has to do with him knowing that he didn't have a good year, knowing that he can do better, and coming into camp more focused. He's already got 7 assists. He only had 8 assists all of last year. And as Richie mentioned, I think maybe earlier on in his career, especially being the third overall pick, Richie, mm-hmm. in that awesome 2008 draft class with Doughty and Stamkos, I think Bogosian maybe thought that he had to be that 50-point defenseman. He had to compete with Drew Doughty, but not everybody's going to be Drew Doughty, just like everybody's not going to be Richie Pollock, right? So you look at Zach Bogosian, I think Richie makes a good point. I think he has simplified his game. He is making the simple plays, and he looks better. And I think he struggled at times this year, guys.
Yes.
He's had his troubles, and I think he's bounced back with good games, where in the past, maybe that turns into 3 or 4 bad games. So you got to give him a lot of credit. And I look at a guy like Mark Stewart, again, Stewart and Trouba, both top 10 in the league in block shots. They're doing a great job. And sure, you know, the Ottawa Senators and Carolina Hurricanes, you could argue, aren't the best teams. But you look at the Montreal Canadiens, they're a top team in the East, even though the East is worse. But even going back to the games that they were winning against Chicago and the Rangers, you got to give the D credit. They've come in this year and they've played a lot better, I guess, minus the first 5 games.
You mentioned Stewart. I think what Stewart has really done lately is he's, because he's been playing with Trouba so much, I think he's getting to know his game, which is familiarity makes you a better team eventually. You hope so, at least. His team's been together for a while. But Trouba and Stewart specifically playing together for a considerable amount of time here, Stewart's able to be, you know, he likes to be aggressive at both lines. That's the blue line, his blue line, and the opposing blue line. But he's seems more assertive and more confident in some of his decisions because, A, the forwards are back-checking, in my opinion, harder, or they have a forward lower than they did in the past, and B, Truba's such a good skater and a smart player defensively that he feels like if he makes a decision and Trouba needs to make up a step, he can do it. So that is also a reason why I think they're performing quite well together.
I agree with you, and I think, you know, we're going to talk about the power play later. I think Jacob Trouba should be getting more power play time.
See, well, I want to talk to you about that because I don't agree. Not because of him.
The gloves are off.
But because I like what they're doing. Well, we'll talk about it.
We'll talk about the power play later on in the show. You know, we talked about Bogosian and you mentioned Stewart and you mentioned Trouba briefly. Mm-hmm. And it sort of is fitting that we didn't say much about Toby Enstrom because he is sort of the perpetually underrated defenseman who just goes about his game.
I don't know if he's underrated. I think that he maybe is considered to be a little bit one-dimensional. And I think that, you know, especially that Islanders game that the Jets actually won, I was pretty hard on Tobias Enstrom on that goal. Who scored that goal? Was it Grabowski?
I know it was Grabowski.
Yeah, it was Grabowski. Yeah. The game in Long Island, they won 4-3. I was hard on him. But, you know, the thing with Enstrom is how many guys can move the puck that he can? How many guys can do some of the things he can do on the power play and stuff like that? And I think Tobias Enstrom is never going to be Chris Pronger. He's a smaller defenseman, and I think he really gets eaten up, and he can get knocked off the puck, and he can struggle with guys like Jeff Carter and Ryan Getzlaff. And I think that will always be the case unless he puts on 50 pounds of muscle, which I don't think he's going to do at this stage in his career. So, no, but I think he's been solid. And, I mean, he's always the guy who logs the most ice time for the Jets. And as Richie said, I think he's really allowed Zach Bogosian to really hone his game.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look forward to tonight's game between the Jets and the Nashville Forsbergs, because that's pretty much what they've been this year. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, Jets Predators preview. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest-running independent comedy club in North America. On behalf of all of us here at Illegal Curve, we want to wish our friends at Rumors a happy birthday. 30-year anniversary party this weekend at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Four of the best comedians you're ever going to see on one stage. All sold out. But tickets available for future shows available at rumorscomedyclub.com. So on behalf of all of us, a big congratulations to our friends at Rumors for the big 3-0.
What's with Richie Snapchatting during the show now?
It's his new thing. He's on a Snapchatting fix, and then he's going to get off of it, and then he's going to complain about why everybody's on the internet at all times and social media and everything else.
True. If you could listen, well, you know, your Twitter action during the show is something else we could bring up.
Well, my Twitter action is about promoting the show. It's not about my personal tweets.
There's been a tweet. There's a report out there that Jordan Leopold was traded.
Jordan Leopold was traded.
That happened pre-show.
Jordan Leopold was traded. I was being tongue-in-cheek when I said that. I wasn't really saying that this is something we needed to discuss on air.
I know you were going to mention it, but I wanted just to throw this out there. Movember Winnipeg gave us a nice little swag kit. So what I wanted to throw out there, we're going to do a little contest now. It started, I guess, if anybody's donated, I'm not sure, but I'll have to check. But if you donate right now to, and I'll tweet out the link again, if you donate to Team Illegal Curve.
Which is really Team You.
Team me, because you guys decided not to participate, even though, Drew, you did have a nice donation there for me. Mm-hmm. We're going to give away a little kit. It's got some hair products, t-shirt, little bracelet, stickers. Remus has got it right here. He got it earlier this week. So, you know, donate any amount, you know, preferably $1,000. No, I'm just kidding. But any amount, because it's a good cause. And, you know, we'll make sure that you get that kit out to you.
Have you got any donations from the Million Dollar Man yet?
No. None from Virgil either. Yeah. But I have been getting some nice donations. I love Movember. I'm going to participate in every year. I think I look pretty handsome with a mustache as well. And the ladies seem to like it as well.
Jets and the Predators tonight in Nashville. Looks like the Jets are making a lineup change. TJ Gagliardi out of the lineup. Chris Thorburn coming back into the lineup. Not sure if that's injury related. No report that that's injury related. A little surprised about it. Not so much because it's, you know, nobody really cares about the Jets' fourth line because fairly inconsequential.
Let's not say nobody cares about it. I mean, again, I remind people, and I know you guys know I'm a big Thorbs fan and all that. He struggled offensively, no doubt.
Well, everybody on that line has
struggled offensively. Well,
nobody on that line has scored a point.
Has he ever succeeded offensively?
Anyways, that line with Jim Slater, and I remind people, Jim Slater, best face-off guy in the Jets, and that's important. And I believe Slater and Gagliardi deserve a little bit of credit for the penalty kill this year.
I'm just saying.
I mean, there hasn't been a lot of offense,
but
you got to give them credit for being good on the PK.
That's why I was a little bit surprised that the move is because TJ Gagliardi has been logging a regular penalty killing duties alongside Jim Slater as either the first or the second unit.
Yep.
So I was a little surprised to see him come out of the lineup to get Thorburn back into the lineup. We'll see. I'm not 100% sure what the logic behind that would be.
Did he not leave the room at one point? Pardon, not leave the room. Didn't he leave the ice during that Carolina game? I could be wrong about that, but I thought he maybe left the ice and came back.
I'm assuming this is injury related.
That's what I was going to say.
It seems logical that it would be injury related because why else would you make that change?
Well, it's two and a half minutes a game on the PK that you're losing, and it's Thorburn on the left side, or if they put Alshuk on the left side, whatever it may be, you're really playing that guy on his off wing, and Thorburn isn't particularly comfortable on the left side if you watch him. And he's played there a little bit, and Alshuk can play it, I think, a little bit better. But both ways, I mean, I'm not so sure what that. I would assume that's an injury-related change.
Right, and even though Thorbs, it doesn't necessarily mean he's getting back into the lineup because of an enforcer on Nashville, but Nashville's not a team that, I mean, they have a couple of guys that can drop the gloves, but they don't have necessarily a designated guy that they would. Sometimes you'll see teams match up and put their enforcer in because they see that the other team's going to dress their enforcer, so I don't think that's the case.
You're right about that, Izzy. They don't have an enforcer.
Jets and the Preds. Again, this is the third time now that these two teams have met early this year so far. The Jets have won one and lost one. They obviously lost that home opener to the Predators back when they were struggling, and then they beat them last week. Was that last week? 2 weeks ago now? It's hard to keep track anymore. Back on home ice when they played against their backup goaltender. They didn't face Pekka Rinne. They faced Carter Hutton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these two teams know each other well, so there shouldn't be very many surprises when it comes to this game. You know, what's the key really here?
Well, I mean, the Predators have been poor on the power play, bottom third in the league. We'll talk to Josh Cooper more about that next segment. They've been even worse in the PK. So you look at the Jets' power play, which we'll break down later in the show, and you talk about the Predators' PK. So you have an opportunity there to maybe make some hay. But it's been even strength where the Predators really succeeded, Drew, and it's been that top line of Mike Ribeiro, James Neal, and Philip Forsberg that's been absolutely on fire. Forsberg, as you mentioned, coming into the segment, has been terrific, and Ribeiro and Neal have been solid as well, and those are the top three scorers on the team. So, I mean, when you come down to it, they're more of a kind of a they can hit you with offense from some of their lines. They're a little top-heavy right now, and that's it. And who's going to draw that line? Again, it'll be interesting to see who that draws that line. I would hazard to guess probably be Jacob Trouba, because he's been drawing a lot of those top guys. Especially, you know, Forsberg and Neal, maybe some guys that have to handle on the boards there a bit. That matchup will be very important. So to me, it's how do you shut down that top line that's going so well?
The Predators, you mentioned their penalty kill. It's 29th in the league. Yeah. It's operating at 72%. You also mentioned that top line of the Predators. Philip Forsberg, 20 points on the season so far, 8 goals, 12 assists, and his line mates, James Neal and Mike Ribeiro, 13 points each. Stu Grimson joined us on NHL Midweek last month, prior to that Jets home opener against the Predators. And here's what he had to say about Filip Forsberg. And this is about a month ago to prove, you know, talk about how he's come into his own.
He comes into rookie camp. He's asked to play a four-team tournament there back in the early stages of September before main camp opens up. He's MVP of a whole complement of players from the Bruins, the Tampa, the Florida, the Predators camp. He's far and away the best player in camp. Carries that into the preseason, where I think he was our leading point getter. And, you know, it's been a very simple, smooth transition right into the regular season. He's out there, you guys. He makes plays. You'll have the opportunity to watch him in a couple of nights. Watch the finer points of his game. Watch the way he changes the angle of his blade. Watch the way he'll, you know, if he's forced to kind of waste a puck, dump a puck, he'll put it in front of a fellow forechecker rather than just put it into some dead space where you can't really do anything productive with it. He's a fun guy to watch. The more you watch him, the more you begin to realize, hey, this is a pretty smart player. And again, you know, one of the original points I wanted to make on Philip Forsberg, he's added some pace to his game. That's the one thing that was lacking. And I think that coupled with this, you know, the way he thinks and plays the game in the finer, smaller areas, I think we got a special player here.
I mean, Stu Grimson knew what he was talking about, obviously, talking about Filip Forsberg. He's just been that good for the Predators so far this year. And, he, you know, as good as Neal and Ribeiro have been as well, I think it does begin and end with Forsberg, and that's going to be sort of a task for the Jets to try and shut down Forsberg, maybe shut down the line accordingly.
Well, the line, yeah. I mean, Drew, you have to understand that Ribeiro is not going to be a guy who goes anywhere near the corners, but terrific passer, great vision, sees the ice exceptionally well, and James Neal does a very good job of finding open space. So that combination is very dangerous, right? You have to always be watching where James Neal is because he's got a good shot, and Ribeiro can find you anywhere. So that's something you got to watch. That's also why you see Forsberg succeed. And I mean, you know, he's going to play different spots in the lineup and things like that over the course of the season. Guys will change up the lines, but Ribeiro's a good passer. Neal, you know, requires attention. Forsberg is very skilled, a lot more confident than he was last year, good puck skills. So he's going to require attention as well. So then where do you focus your attention? And we talk about maybe what the matchups are. Is it Trouba and Stewart, or is it Enstrom and Bogosian? We've broken that down on the show before. It's also interesting to know who the center will be, who the forward line will be against that line. And it's hard to get matchups sometimes when you're on the road, right? That's going to be important because the center role, if you talk about all three of these guys are dangerous. It's not one of those lines where those two guys are dangerous and one guy's more of a defensively responsible guy. Three guys here are dangerous. And while you can play off Ribeiro a bit because of scoring, because he's not a great shooter or scorer, the other two guys, you can't do that.
Yeah, and I think the, you know, if my math is correct, which it's probably not, sorry, Dad. just for those who don't know, my dad was a math professor. 20 of the 41 goals that they've scored have been from that line. So that's 49.8%, something like that. 50%.
Wow.
Drew's looking at me like, you know.
Drew's on Twitter.
You don't know what you're talking
Drew's
about.
Drew's on
here.
Twitter.
Yeah. No, I know.
But
I'm
I mean, 50% of the goals, essentially, have come from the Ribeiro, Neal, Forsberg line. Yeah. So, I mean, when you talk about top heavy, that applies to the Nashville Predators. And the Jets have obviously lost one and won one against the Nashville Predators already this year.
Well,
but it's a good line, and it's not just Philip Forsberg who can sting you, because James Neal, we know he's a former 30-goal guy. So
you look at their opponents. I mean, you talk about the top heaviness, and then the second line is Matt Cullen, Derek Roy, and Craig Smith. None of those three guys are really scaring you, or are they tearing it up? I mean, Roy has 7 points. He's got no goals. Craig Smith's got 8 points. Matt Cullen's got 5 points. You look at the Predators' third line, and the third line that they're going to be rolling out tonight, Olli Jokinen, Callie Yarncroc, and Gabriel Bork.
Well, I think they had Craig Smith with them last game, but yeah, keep going.
But, I mean, based on the rushes this morning, that's going to be their third line.
Okay.
They combined for a grand total of 0 points.
Olli Jokinen's had a hell of a year.
Actually, Neil, I should mention, Neil's actually a former 40-goal guy. I forgot about that.
Sure.
I just checked
James
on that.
Neal, yeah.
No, but Richie, this is a team...
I mean, my point is, you focus on shutting down that top line.
Yeah, and...
And there's nobody aside from that top line that has done anything this year offensively for the Nashville Predators.
Craig Smith is their next most dangerous player, and he's a talented player, Drew, and some of the other guys on the squad can hurt you. You know, guys with good work ethics, like Eric Nystrom, and guys who've scored before in the league, like Matt Cullen, but you're right. I mean, this is a team, well, it's top-heavy. That's what we just spoke about. You also have to understand, when you play against the Nashville Predators, you have to be extremely aware of their defense jumping into the rush. Shea Weber, Ryan Ellis, Seth Jones, Matthias Ekholm, Roman Josi, certainly to a lesser extent Anton Volchenkov. There's a significant drop-off in terms of offensive skill for Volchenkov. But those other five defensemen can all join the rush and can all be effective offensive players. So when you're talking about shutting down the Nashville Predators, you have to focus not only on the forwards, but also on the defensemen.
Yeah, and they're not going to give you a lot. And as you mentioned, Richie, Weber and Josi, both fourth and fifth in the NHL in ice time, so they're going to play close to half of the game. They're not going to give you a lot. They're excellent. I think arguably one of the best D pairs in the league. I think certainly top three D pairs in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen the Jets in Winnipeg score 3 goals, and I don't think you're going to score much more than that against this team, especially with the way Pekka Rinne has been returning to his form that we're used to from Pekka Rinne. And you know, I think Seth Jones has done an excellent job. This is just a team that, you know, really relies on a very good top line. And you see, even with Mike Fisher, who's been out the whole year, and Colin Wilson won't be playing, and Stahlberg, but even with those guys in the lineup, it's not a deep team. And, you know, it's the type of team that, it's not a physical team either. I think they're actually the least penalized team in the NHL. And
it's
so,
not a bad thing.
You know, I'm just railing off stats right now, by the way. You'll be able to see those stats on illegalcurve.com, by the way.
Thanks for that. Let's go to break. When we come back, Josh Cooper is going to join us, talk more about the Predators ahead of tonight's Jets-Predators game in Nashville. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mindell alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from Yahoo Sports, Josh Cooper. He covers the Nashville Predators and knows them better than anyone in the NHL. Josh, first and foremost, happy birthday, buddy.
Thank you. Appreciate it, guys. It's a good day.
What is it? Solid 20, 21 now?
32.
you're still younger than I am, so you got that on me.
30 years younger.
Yeah, 30 years.
Seems like yesterday, Josh, you were having your bar mitzvah.
Oh, my God. You know, we watched the video of that the other day. It was brutal. It seriously was.
Josh obviously brought you on to talk about the Jets and the Predators ahead of tonight's game there in Nashville. You look at the Predators, and so far this season, they're best in the league at 5-on-5 goals for goals against ratio. What has made them so good at even strength so far?
I think, you know, I hate to use the word system. It's just like one of my least favorite things to say in the NHL, but it has to be Peter Laviolette's system. I mean, I don't know what else it is. I mean, their power play's been so bad that I think that they just have to score goals at even strength, and Peter Laviolette's got a pretty good system for that. Clearly, they're not very good on the power play, or at least the system doesn't have a very good power play percentage. So I think that it's got to just be the way they attack on even strength, and Philip Forsberg seems to be the guy who's really benefited from that. I mean, geez, it's a plus 19. I mean, it's unreal at this stage of the year.
Josh, we wanted to talk to you about the penalty kill, because right now, aside from one other team, it's the worst in the league. Why has it struggled so much?
Well, you can go back a year ago to when they traded Kevin Kline for Michael Delzato, a deal that clearly didn't work out very well. It worked out well in the tabloids. It didn't work out very well on ice for them. Kevin Kline was a great penalty killer. And then you add on to that fact, they also traded Nick Spaulding in the James Neal deal. Nick Spaulding was their best penalty-killing forward. So they got rid of a lot of really good guys on the PK and didn't really replace them at all. And I think that's what you're seeing right now.
Josh, you made reference to the power play, and you know, losing a couple guys, as you mentioned, Spaulding and Kline might hurt the penalty kill. But you look at the power play, you know, a bunch of talented offensive defensemen on the squad, and bringing Ribeiro and some of the other forwards they've brought in, you'd think the power play would be better than 21st overall in the league. And what do you think the reason for the struggles there?
Honestly, from what I've seen, tinkering, I think that they've sort of lost what they do well. You know, which is obviously just kind of trying to shade over to Shea Weber and letting him sort of blast from the point. I think that it's a more forward-oriented power play, and because it's more forward-oriented, I think because of that, you're seeing some issues where you're not getting into the blue line enough, and that's where their strength is between Shea Weber and Roman Josi. They split up Shea Weber and Roman Josi, which I think was a big mistake. And I think that, you know, they're just trying to play around too much and not go to their strengths, which is pretty clear what those strengths are.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Josh Cooper. He now works for Yahoo Sports. He knows the Nashville Predators as well as anybody in the NHL. Josh, you look at it now, and the performance of Philip Forsberg so far this year just goes to show that right now that Marty Erat for Philip Forsberg trade from a couple years ago is one of the worst trades in recent NHL memory. I mean, Forsberg obviously had first-round talent, 8 goals, 12 assists so far this season. Why has he been so good so far this year?
Just maturity, getting older, understanding the game. I mean, I remember, I think it was like a meet-the-team party last year. He was playing a game of cornhole with some college kids, and he looked like a college kid. He doesn't look like a college kid anymore. So, I mean, just like when you look at him, he just looks wider, bigger, stronger. He's really hard to knock off the puck, kind of like his namesake, Peter, who's going to the Hall of Fame on Monday. You know, he's just very, very good at a lot of those things. And, you know, kudos to him. You know, he's worked hard during the offseason and changed his game and become a much more dynamic player for this team.
Josh, after Philip Forsberg, you look at the next two leading scorers. It's James Neal, Mike Ribeiro, obviously both acquisitions, Ribeiro through free agency, James Neal through the trade with the Pittsburgh Penguins. What have your impressions been of James Neal and Mike Ribeiro? Not just how many points they've put up so far, but really how they fit into this team and how they fit into Peter Laviolette's system.
To be honest, I mean, okay. You know, like I really think that Philip Forsberg's been the guy that's driven that line. I mean, you know, not to take away from, you know, James Neal and Mike Ribeiro. I mean, they're clearly guys who put up points. But, you know, something really stuck out to me when I talked to Sidney Crosby a few weeks ago. And I asked him about the difference between James Neal and Patrick Hornquist. And he says, you know, Hornquist gets a lot of his points from the hard areas, going to the net. James Neal gets his points from going to the softer areas, being kind of like the circles with his one-timers and stuff, which is perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's just simply, you know, when he scores, it's not kind of like he's scoring by just pushing the pace of the game and going to the net. He's scoring by just getting lost in coverage. And I think that's the major difference. And the same with Mike Ribeiro. I mean, he almost sort of lulls you to sleep with kind of looking off, almost like a point guard in the NBA, and then just kind of whips the pass. You're like, where did that come from? So they're effective in their own way, and I think they fit fine in that regard. I still think there's a lot of work for them to do in terms of just getting better and becoming more effective hockey players just in general within the system, just because I look at how they play and I don't know how well it lends to the postseason per se. But, I mean, when you're compiling points in the regular season, it does pretty well, obviously.
Yeah, Josh, a couple more guys that the team acquired in the offseason. I want to start off with Derek Roy here. Yeah, probably a guy I thought had his better days and doesn't maybe skate as well as he used to, but he's got no goals in 16 games. He's got some helpers. Why do you think he hasn't worked so far?
I thought he would be tremendous for this team. I thought he'd be a guy with a chip on his shoulder to come in and really do a lot of damage, and he obviously hasn't. I mean, for $1 million, though, as a second-line center, I think he's okay, but you know, he's not getting a lot of special teams time. He's not getting put in a lot of offensive situations. And then, obviously, a lot of it's just always situational. I mean, You know, when you're in a good spot and you're in good situations, you're going to be put in those real good spots. I mean, and he's just not right now. So, you know, I think, but beyond that, he's just, you know, maybe his best days are behind him. I mean, he's 31 years old. He was coming off a lot of injuries. Like, yes, he worked out at the Gary Roberts camp this summer, but it doesn't automatically mean success. So, you know, maybe he is slowing down. I don't know.
You know, Josh, Olli Jokinen, obviously we know him quite well from playing here the past couple of years in Winnipeg, but he's played in 16 games and he has 0 points. I mean, that's kind of hard even for an offensive player, or at least perceived to be an offensive player. Is he going to be, you know, continue to get into the lineup here, or are we looking at when some of the other guys return possibly sitting in the press box?
You know, the excuse that they sort of make here is that he's playing a third-line role, but even third-liners can score. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really weird, especially, you know, I watch him play and I'm like, wow, this is a guy that faced, I mean, didn't he score 40 goals one year, like at 39 one year with Florida? He's like 91 points. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, I look at him and I'm just like, I can't believe this guy had that many points. I mean, he just doesn't look like a player at all. I mean, granted, a lot of it's the type of role and ability that you're being asked to play, but to me, he just isn't playing that type of style. So I don't know, you know, I mean, on the one hand, I want to say he's not getting the offensive miss. On the other hand, I mean, you figure even a blind squirrel finds a nut sometimes. And, you know, I mean, he just hasn't found any points, which is really, really surprising for a guy who has scored at such a high level throughout his entire career.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Josh Cooper. He works for Yahoo Sports now. He's covered the Nashville Predators for a number of years in Nashville.
Josh, can I call you J. Diddy now that you work for Puck Daddy?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
I wanted to talk to you about the faceoffs. Paul Gostad is actually fourth in the NHL in faceoffs, but you look at the rest of the team, and I was looking at this, and they're actually 28th in the NHL in faceoffs. How concerned is Peter Laviolette with kind of the struggles of some of the other guys, Derek Roy and others on the faceoffs?
I think less so than others. I think that he's not quite as into those types of things. Barry Trotz, I know, really was into starting out with the puck, and that was a big deal for him. I don't think Lavi is as much into stuff like that. I think that, you know, it doesn't really matter with him as long as you just skate the other team into the ground, which is kind of their system. I don't think the faceoffs matter quite as much. But, I mean, you know, you just throw for a big faceoff. I mean, really, like if you do want to start with the puck, you just throw number 28 out there and he'll do it for you.
Josh, we'll let you go on this last question. He sort of gets lost behind Shea Weber and Seth Jones. I'm talking about Roman Josi. You know, throughout the NHL, sort of how underappreciated is Roman Josi and what he brings to the Predators' defense on a night-in, night-out basis?
I think defensively he could get a little bit better. His stick isn't that great. But I think that from an overall just game perspective, he's really solid. I mean, he's steady. He skates very well. He plays, you know, 27, 28 minutes a night. I mean, he's overall just a very, very, very solid player. And I think, you know, he's the type of guy that any team would love to have on his blue line. And the Preds have him for another 6 years. So fantastic for them.
Josh Cooper works for Yahoo Sports. He's covered the Nashville Predators for a number of years. Now, Josh, before we let you hang up with us, the All-Star Game is going to be in Nashville in 2016. Do you have room for all of us in your condo?
always.
Okay, just making sure that you can handle us, you know, for a weekend in Nashville. I think we'll put that on the schedule.
Yeah, Josh, Drew, and
I do have one question though. I go through an entire radio segment with you guys, and no Colin Wilson questions.
I mean, that's true. He's been scratched as of late. I mean, you know, is he approaching the end of the line there?
Oh, how many more times can you ask that question, Drew?
I mean, every time I go on radio in Winnipeg, I get a Colin Wilson question. I think so. But I was just ribbing you guys on that. But yeah, I mean, I just watch him play, and I'm just like, you know, he's on his last chance, and it's getting close to being over at this point.
And Remus only played Tom Petty coming into the segment, not Springsteen, so he's not on the ball so far, although otherwise he's done a great job.
Exactly, absolutely.
Josh, thanks very much for doing this. Happy belated birthday again, buddy.
Thank you. Anytime, guys.
All righty, we'll talk to you soon.
Later, G. Diddy.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we'll look at the Winnipeg Jets power play and its recent struggles.
You're listening to The Runaround Table with Rick Ralph Podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
thank you to our friend Josh Cooper for joining us to talk about the Jets-Predators game. In case you missed any of it, it's available for download sooner rather than later on TSN1290.ca, IllegalCurve.com, and of course, just subscribe on iTunes and you get it sent to you automatically. It's nice and easy that way. Jets and the Preds tonight, 6 p.m. on this fine station. Bayak, Edmonds, Nighty with the call, getting set for the Jets and the Predators. And then, of course, tomorrow afternoon, the second half of the back-to-back with the Jets and the Minnesota Wild in St. Paul, Minnesota. The guy we qualified on NHL Midweek, he won the contest.
Did he?
Yeah. The guy to go down to Minnesota got his tickets to go courtesy of the Egan Convention Visitors and Convention Bureau to head down and see the Jets in the Wild tomorrow afternoon in St. Paul. So that's
I believe we have him right now on air, on live?
No, we don't.
Oh. Well, congratulations to, what was his name?
I have to look it up. I forget what
okay,
it was.
Okay, well, congratulations. That'll be a good was?
Will Denslow.
There you go. Will Denslow. Qualified boy, Will. On NHL Midweek. And he's off to see the Jets in the Wild tomorrow afternoon
Big
in
Willie.
St. Paul.
He forgot Ezzy.
Yeah, he figured he probably wouldn't be able to get across the border with Ezzy.
That's true.
Yeah. Remember the time I lost you guys in Minneapolis?
I was telling that story last night, actually.
Which story is that?
Just disappeared. Didn't see you guys
the
for
one
3 hours.
When we went on the football trip about 6 weeks ago, and Ezzy left all of his good friends to go hang out with a couple randoms, and then we found him trying to use his hotel swipe card to enter into an office building.
Across the street, yeah.
Across the street. Yeah. That wasn't the hotel.
You guys missed out on Free Pouring at Sneaky Pete's. Let me tell you, that was a fun night.
Jets power play is 27th in the NHL at 11.1%. We're through 17 games right now, and there's been real no signs that this power play is going to break out anytime. You know, what's been the biggest problem with the power play from your perspective so far?
Well, it's a good thing that we have a full segment here. No, in all seriousness, I think the reason why we wanted to bring this up is because I think you have to start looking at making some changes, Richie. And I think we've seen this going back to the first year, and it's difficult because I know, Richie, you've always said, well, it's a function of the lack of skill and all that, but I think there's something more to that. And I look at the Jets' power play this year, and this goes back to last year, Richie. I think it's too predictable. And I know that Tobias Enstrom and Dustin Byfuglien, you want to have those guys playing the points for the majority of the power play because those are your most skilled guys. Dustin Byfuglien's got the big cannon. Tobias Enstrom is your quarterback, right? And then sometimes you can put Dustin Byfuglien up front, but you got to make a change here. And aside from that Islanders game where they scored two goals, if you remember, on that five-minute major, they've only scored two goals in their last eight games. And it's mind-boggling to me that they've only scored six power play goals all year. I think Buffalo's only scored four, by the way. But I think it's time to make some changes. And I know that they've tried four forwards in that 4-4 overtime, and that did not work. You know, you had Evander Kane, you know, kind of skating around and being the point man there. But I think, to me, I look at who has the most the most talent on the Jets on the back end, and you could argue that it's Enstrom, but to me, I think Jacob Trouba deserves to have more time on the power play, and I think he's got a really good shot. We've seen how good his shot can be in that goal in the Pittsburgh game, but I think it's just time to really maybe have some new looks, and whether that means breaking Dustin Byfuglien and Tobias Enstrom up, which they have done before, but to me, there's something that's fundamentally wrong here, because I don't buy that whole thing. Blake Wheeler's a talented player. We've seen how talented he can be, and just last game, he was on the score sheet twice. So to me, it has to do with the scheme, and I know that they've worked on this, and Paul Maurice wanted to make the power play better, but to me, it's got worse, and it was tough to get worse because I think it was, 23rd, 24th in the league last year, whatever it was, but it's 27th now. But to me, you got to try something here because it's going to bite you eventually, Richie, when you need that power play goal, and they just can't seem to get it. It always seems to zap energy. I've said this before. It never seems to be a catalyst and give them energy in a game. It seems to always zap it, and I think it's time to look at making some changes.
They were 25th on the power play last year in the NHL with a percentage of 15.4%.
All right, well, he's done now, so I'm going to chime in here. I actually, watching the power play, I actually don't mind the power play right now. I think that I looked at the two units, and you have your one unit of Perreault, Ladd, and Little, and you have your second unit of, and that's one thing they've been doing is they've Enstrom and Byfuglien playing with both lines, and the other line being Scheifele, Kane, and Wheeler. And then you'll get a little bit of Bogosian, Trouba later on and on the power play. A couple things here. I actually think I think the coaching staff right now is maximizing the potential of the roster. Now, they're not succeeding in terms of output right now, but The setups on the power play in the offensive zone, I think, are the right. They are utilizing the skills of the team correctly. Again, there's only so much you can do with the players you have. Maurice doesn't look down and see Sidney Crosby and say, "Okay, go do your magic." First off, I think they're doing a very good job. They're being more creative than last year, and they're doing an exceptional job. Not exceptional, but a very good job of moving the puck into the offensive zone on the power play, at least recently. Tobias Enstrom is important. Now, he doesn't have a great shot, but Tobias Enstrom's ability to come out of his own zone and through the neutral zone and allow the team to get into the offensive zone is very unheralded.
Zone entry, as it were.
Well, yeah, that's the fancy term, but that's to call it getting into the offensive zone.
Not that fancy.
One thing that they're doing this year, maybe different than last year, is that they're doing a nice draw pass in the neutral zone, and they're making a quick pass across the ice to enter the zone. Alternatively, if they think a guy like Wheeler gets a drop pass and is able to enter the zone with speed, he'll do that, and he likes to do that off the left side. So they're getting into the zone. I like the way they're doing that. That's creative. It's different, and they're getting into the zone okay. When they get into the offensive zone, the power play is basically running through the defenseman and through Scheifele on the left side in the offensive zone on his unit and through Perreault on the right side. That's the right play. You get Kane in the middle, Little in the middle. Now, it obviously changes at times, and there's different things. You get Ladd, Wheeler on the red lines, on the goal lines. I like those setups, and I think they've been generating chances. I mean, this is the talent that they have, and I have no problems with what they're doing right now. If they had different talent, and I think they've kind of come to this setup. I like what they're. I don't have an issue with it.
So
I know they're the bottom.
Why isn't it working? Because I look at it, and to me, I agree with you. And I mean, I you're limited, and you're not going to put out Jim Slater and Chris Thorburn on the power play, right? But why not try it? And why not try someone like Adam Lowry? To me, the most success the Jets have had of late has really been using a guy like Blake Wheeler and tipping shots. And, you know, Blake Wheeler, I know everyone loves to see those goals where he flies off the wing and everything like that. But when you're not scoring, you have to get those dirty goals. And I feel like they don't do that. They still...
Okay, but if you're doing Lowry, Ezzy, because that's one guy. You don't need Frölich on the power play. And that's basically what you're looking at there. It's going to be Frölich. You're getting Perreault in there, right? You got Byfuglien on the point. So basically your top nine is being utilized, except for Lowry. If you put Lowry out there, you want him to be in front of the net.
Yeah.
But on a lot of these setups, the guy in front of the net's got to go down low and be the catalyst from the corner.
Like Blake Wheeler does now.
Or Ladd or whatever, maybe. Exactly. Yeah, can he do that? And if not, then you have a guy standing in front of the net. Well, that's useful for the screen. And sure, they could use a little more of a presence in front. But I don't know if that solves your problems. Again, it's not like you got Crosby or Malkin there. So I think so you're saying why isn't it working? I think if they continue to play the way they're playing, it will get better.
Right.
Now, will it be a top power play? No, because they don't have the skill, top-end skill. That's why they're playing a defensive style. Because they don't have the top-end skill to run and gun, even if you can in the National Hockey League. But if you look at it, I mean, Buffalo is poor on the power play. You look at Montreal, you'd think that would change. Minnesota, they can't score at all right now. LA, some of these teams have been quite successful. Right, some of these teams, I think that'll change. I think Winnipeg will move up to be in the 22 to 16 range by season end. That's what I would say.
Yeah, and I'm just making an observation because and Jacob Trouba, you could make the argument that, you know, maybe because Byfuglien and Enstrom are the better power play players, they're not going to change a lot. But I look at, you know, the game against Carolina, they only had two power plays. He got 56 seconds. And then back to the Montreal game where they had three power plays, he got 47 seconds. So that's essentially he's getting one or two shifts on the second power play unit.
That's right.
So I'm just saying, I mean...
And they're logging those guys more time.
So maybe you try to break up Enstrom and Byfuglien and then put Enstrom with Trouba, and then maybe you put Byfuglien again with maybe even a forward on the point. It's a tough call, but I'm just saying, like, I realize, Richie, you're right. There is some puck luck involved, and they are getting shots. I mean,
you get some good chances.
They are getting chances, but I just, to me, the one guy that has that ability that maybe isn't being utilized enough is Trouba.
And you look at it, though, but this is the thing. So their second unit, or first, whatever you want to call it, the Scheifele, Kane, and Wheeler unit. Kane can't have the puck on the quarterback as a quarterback or run it through him on the off wing on the right side because he's just not a good puck distributor. So you got to put him in the middle. That's what I think, and then have him go to the net. Okay, so then you got to go through Wheeler or Scheifele. If you're going to go through the wingers or the corners or the forwards in the corners or on the half boards, which is where most power plays run through these days, both are right-handed shooting guys, so you're more dangerous having them on the left side because they can shoot, especially Scheifele, who can step into a quick wrist shot. The problem you have is that Enstrom is your lone left-handed shooting guy in the power play who really can play power play. And the problem is that they play off Enstrom. And why do they play off Enstrom? Because Enstrom doesn't have a great one-timer, a great shot. So then you're looking at Byfuglien backdoor.
meaning Byfuglien from the right side going down the wing and cutting in for a backdoor pass. The problem you have there is if you're playing off of Enstrom, which teams do, then if the forward who's defending Enstrom, if Enstrom had a good shot, the forward would have to come out higher in the zone. But now he can stay back. And when he stays back, what happens? The pass to Byfuglien streaking is not as available. So that's the one thing, but that's a personnel thing. And you can't put Lowry on the point. So, I mean, that's the problem they have. I think the coaching staff is doing a nice job with what they have right now.
Is Toby Enstrom shooting enough, though? I know he doesn't have a great shot, but shouldn't he be? To me, it seems like he's not even keeping people honest on cheating on him.
A little bit more. Sure, he's got to shoot a little bit more, Drew. Probably keep him honest. That's fair. But, you know, he is what he is, too, right? I mean, it's hard to kind of make these guys change a lot.
Right, and that just means if you know that he's not going to shoot, Drew, that just means that you're going to want to set up the shot in the middle or, you know, set up something down low. And they do that quite often. To me, it's just, you know, Kane, Shifley, these guys are super talented. It just, to me, it's a matter of time before they get going. But it's one of those things. All Jets fans know this. The power play has always been a work in progress, and it's always struggled. I just think that it can definitely be a lot better than it has been.
When the coach looks down the boards and is able to call on Nikolaj Ehlers and different guys like that, it'll be better.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Saturday Spotlight featuring our interview with Carey Fraser. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.